Now, yesterday, 174 new cases of COVID-19 were identified, and very sadly, one further death. It is the first time since May 22nd that the number of new cases has risen above 100. 118 of those cases were in Laois, Offaly and Kildare, the three counties which are back under a form of lockdown, with the majority of those, again, associated with food processing plants. So as the number of cases continue to rise and more areas face a potential lockdown, the head of the HSE, Paul Reid, has also warned they will need a further €1 billion to cope with the rising cost of COVID. Paul Reid joins us on the line now. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
And the jump yesterday, a lot of people when they saw it, myself included, would have seen 174 cases, quite worrying, that the highest number for a long, long time. How worried are you about them?
Yes, I'm sure that's a significant concern for people all across the country, and not just in the three regions impacted or counties impacted. For us, yes, this has been an ongoing concern since last week, since we've seen the numbers rising. We're now seeing daily numbers above and beyond what we've been seeing for a long, long time. In fact, the last time we've seen these numbers was when we were on the decline, and now we're seeing them on the rise. So they are quite concerning for us. Now, in one aspect, yesterday's numbers, again, look like highly concentrated in specific outbreaks. But there is a significant number, about 50, which are spread right across the country. So the reality for us, Sean, is we know that this virus is, it's bursting at the seams to get into the community. And everything we do is about protecting it, getting into the community.
Mm. What should we expect, do you think, in the coming days? Are we going to see similar numbers as there's more testing in these areas?
Well, that's really an important one over the next 3 to 4 days, because we've had a lot of mass testing in a lot of the food processing plants and where the outbreaks are, and that would obviously drive a lot of the numbers we're seeing coming through. So an important thing for us in the next few days is to see how that trend emerges. And does it begin to wash itself through? Does it increase, or does it? We see a further impact across the country. From a HSE perspective, Sean, we've always been looking at three kind of scenarios that may emerge with COVID in the next phase. One is, do we see a massive second surge all across the country? Would be that we see a continued phase of peaks and troughs all across the country of high volume cases. And then thirdly, which is what happens in this case, is significant local and regionalised outbreaks. You know, so the actions that we take and government have taken, they have to be timely, they have to be proactive, and they have to be proportionate.
In the likes of the centres that we've seen them now, the meat plants, these congregated settings, what are you doing, or what steps can be taken now to ensure that those similar kind of factories in other counties are not going to see the same thing? Is the likes of testing in counties outside these three going to be stepped up, or how are you going to tackle that?
Yeah, and the first thing, just need to kind of give a bit of context. I mean, one thing which has proven well in this instance has been our testing and tracing, because testing and tracing is about identifying outbreaks as they emerge, testing them, and then obviously tracking those contacts. And it's proven that it has identified them. But it's not a silver bullet, and it can't prevent outbreaks from happening. So the first line of defence in all scenarios are how individual public health measures that individuals can take and that organisation can take around infection prevention and control. So that is the first line of defence for all of us against this off of virus. So in terms specifically to your question, what we will be implementing and have started over the weekend, specifically in the region and beyond, we've a range of actions that we've taken specifically around testing. So we're obviously continuing to test in a lot of the food processing plants. We're also extending those testings now beyond the plants impacted, and we'll be continuing to do that over the next 2 weeks as well. We're also doing some serial testing around long-term care facilities and nursing homes, obviously in the region and in the region's impact initially and beyond. And we'll also be commencing a process of serial testing in direct provision centres. That's a range of initiatives. But our strong advice to the food processing plants and other kind of vulnerable organisations is infection prevention and control. And as we've had outbreaks in the past, we've worked strongly with them, with the organisations, and to be fair to them, they have put in place measures, but You know, there's a whole range of societal and workforce organisation issues here that need to be addressed as well.
Do you believe those measures are robust enough? Because there's been a lot of commentary about the HSA hasn't done any unannounced inspections, and that if these kind of infections are going on in these plants, clearly something is amiss.
Well, I think if, firstly, there is a national standing committee established by government which has a multi-agency approach on it, from the Health and Safety Authority, Department of Agriculture, or so has the HSA, Department of Justice, or other state agencies. So that's going to be key in terms of getting a whole set of mobilisation around these factors. But there is also, and we've seen this in nursing homes as well in the past, there are also the issues around, we do have a lot of this workforce in these plants, obviously non-Irish in many cases, but not all, primarily sharing accommodation, primarily transporting to work together. And then in some instances, you know, some people going into one site and some people going to another site. So you have a risk of transmission outside of the plant and then into the plants. So it's a whole factor of issues around how people are organised, how people are living, how people are transporting. And also the issue that we want to make sure, as cases are identified, that people do obviously restrict their movements while waiting on a test, and as tests positive, that they do have to isolate. And that's a key issue. And then there are language barriers, which are more complex, and we have to have, you know, supports in terms of interpretation, etc.
All of that, absolutely right. And it is, of course, a very complex issue. But I think what a lot of people will be wondering, particularly those who aren't in the three counties who are affected, is how can we prevent our county from going into that? Because there's a lot of people out there who feel, well, I did all the things right myself and wore my mask and didn't go and see people, and that because of a small cluster, they're now in lockdown. So are there more steps that could be taken around these places, where congregated settings where you're likely to have outbreaks, to prevent them, or to certainly limit the scope of other counties then having to go into lockdown?
Yeah, and certainly one of the key outcomes from this has been and will continue to be a strong engagement and communications with the sector itself. And again, do want to recognise they have put in place a lot of measures in these and a lot of the plans. But in some cases, we've had to close down plans and will do so on public health grounds in the future. But the kind of actions that need to be taken are, there needs to be some consideration about transportation of workforce. There needs to be some consideration about strong infection prevention and controls, understanding and communications. But equally within the plants as well, each plant needs to strongly assess the workforce practices and infection prevention control measures. And to be fair, again, as we go in with our public health teams, we have received quite open engagement with the owners, with the management of these plants.
The Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, has said he doesn't believe the impacted plants in those three counties in the Midlands should open tomorrow. Would you share that opinion?
Well, the reality from our perspective is our public health teams will call it. And I have full confidence about how they call it. They will, and they have done in the past and will continue to do. If we see high risk and the issues around further transmission within the plants, or any issues around workforce not complying with our public health guidance, or any issues around the management of the plants not complying with public health guidance, that's a decision that we'll take regularly and as often as needed.
And how active are those teams? Are they going to be in those plants, for example, today or tomorrow, deciding whether they should stay open now that we know that they're immediately affected?
Yeah, we have had teams mobilised, public health teams, testing teams, tracing teams, all over the weekend. They've been working throughout this weekend in those affected areas and others. Once we receive more than one case in a place, you know, it's deemed as an outbreak, and we will, our teams have been mobilised throughout the weekend, and we've had to reassign resources from other regions into the severely impacted three counties at the moment. So throughout this weekend, we will be continuously and are continuously engaging in those plans.
Paul, there's obviously been a lot of talk over the last couple of months about this potential second wave, particularly as things have gotten easier. Is this it? Do you think, are we at that point now? Or is this, as you mentioned earlier, one potential blip before things can maybe be brought back under control by the limited lockdown?
No, I don't think we are right now at a second wave. You know, if you stand back and just look at our incidence rates across the country and take out the impact of the three counties at the moment, it wouldn't indicate that we're at a second wave or a surge. If you look at the positivity cases across the testing, taking out the three kind of impacted areas, it wouldn't indicate we're right now at a second surge. If you look at the impact on our hospitals right now, thankfully, we haven't seen massive surge in hospitalised cases again, and equally in our ICU. So those measures would not indicate. However, as I said at the opening of the discussion, Sean, you know, the three scenarios, whether it's a second surge, peaks and troughs can emerge on a regular basis or local regionalised, they're all the scenarios we plan for all the time. And the public health, and as much and our public have been fantastic. I think we stand out as a country and how the country has got behind us. And the public engagement with the public health measures has been quite phenomenal. Mm. And I know it's relentless and we keep repeating the message. But the one thing that's absolutely consistent is this virus. It doesn't take a break. It doesn't get tired. It's resilient and it will keep going in the way it's gone from the start. So we have to match it with our resilience and we have to match it with our public health measures and guidance. But I know it's difficult. I know. I just want to equally say it's hugely difficult for the three counties, commercial and the public, impacted. But it's not just about the three counties either. I know they're most impacted. Everyone across the country really needs to stay with us and be relentless with this virus.
Finally, on this particular issue, because there's quite a bit on your own plate aside from COVID or that has been otherwise impacted from COVID. But how are you? Can you bring us inside the conversations that you're having in terms of looking at these potential further lockdowns in different counties? And what I'm getting at is a lot of businesses, for example, will be wondering, well, what is the point it has to get to before there would be some sort of a lockdown, or what is the acceptable level of transmission going on that things can stay open? A lot of the tracking internationally now is the cases per 100,000, which obviously have spiked in the three Midlands counties and haven't elsewhere. So is there a threshold that public health is working towards in that once it reaches this point, we need to start looking at restrictions, or is it probably a bit more nuanced than that?
Yeah, the reality is it's across a range of factors. So certainly the incidence rates, the positivity rates for testing, a key measure which has been ours from the start, and these are managed by the Public Health Emergency Team and ultimately government decisions. You know, we will closely monitor the impact on the hospital system. And as I mentioned, you know, if you look at the peak of this, we had 879 people confirmed cases in hospital, and we had 160 people in ICU. Thankfully this morning, just for context, thankfully this morning, we're at 15 hospitalised cases and 6 people in ICU. So, you know, that measure would, and that's difficult for all those people, but that measure, you know, hasn't risen hugely over the last while. But as we know how this started, it can rise very quickly. So, you know, it is really a range of measures, and it's not just the top two or three triggers you can look at.
Mm. Elsewhere, you've done a very extensive interview this morning in the Business Post on page 12 and 13, quite detailed, not only talking about what we've been talking about for the last few minutes, but also everything else, the other issues, launch of care that you are going to have to deal with in the health service post-pandemic or mid-pandemic, however it will be over the next while. One of the things, and you did admit that the HSE made a number of mistakes at the start of this when we were in the throes of it. One of them was in relation to the private hospital contracts. We know, as it turned out, the capacity was sought, wasn't needed in the end, which in many ways is a good thing, but also meant money spent that wasn't used. You are now negotiating a new contract over the coming weeks with the private hospitals. How is that going to look, and what are you doing differently to ensure that those mistakes that you've talked about are not repeated?
Well, just put things in a little bit of context in the discussion of the interview, which I think fairly reflects the views. It's not specifically about mistakes. It's about what do you learn from the first phase that we have to do differently in the next phase. And if you look back at what was happening, all across Europe in the early stages of February, between Italy, Spain, France, close countries to us. We saw a massive impact on a frightening scale, a scary scale of what was happening in the acute hospital system. And that was what was visible on our screens. That's what we were talking to other health systems was happening. And we had to mobilise very quickly because we know in the Irish health system, on a good day, we operate at 95% capacity. So when I look back on this, it wasn't a mistake to get extra capacity. But what we will have learned from that very clearly is that as we go about it in the next phase, we need something a bit more agile. And thankfully, we didn't see the impact again in Ireland because of the actions the public did and your listeners did. And we want to keep that going. But what we now would see in the next phase would be a more agile system. And we are in talks with the private hospital groups. A system where, firstly, as we head into a winter period, that we can have some scope to continue some services that we may not get to, whether some diagnostics or some actual services that we want delivered. Secondly, that we have the ability to very quickly increase our capacity on the basis of a surge. And that may be in certain locations, it may be all across the country, or it may be in certain regions. So I think the learning for us has been a more agile and flexible agreement that we would like to come to with the private hospital groups.
So more selective access, perhaps, rather than the blanket takeover where it's needed?
Yeah, selective access for certain services or selective access in certain geographies. And, you know, I would be confident the private hospitals will work with us on that basis. We do plan to initiate a procurement process where hospitals would work with us in terms of diagnostics and services. And I would be very confident, as in the first phase, if we did see a second surge, private hospitals would be supportive in addressing, which, you know, could be a very massive impact. Hopefully we don't get there. Everything we're doing is to stop us from having to get to that point. And that is driving a significant element of the cost, because you are correct. We're dealing with COVID, but we actually have to manage the health service now across a range of challenges and living with COVID.
You also mentioned, and this has obviously been the kind of an on-again, off-again structure of the HSE, where initially it was regional, it was then centralised, and then the proposal has been obviously for regional boards to be, or regional executive bodies to be reintroduced over the next few years as part of Sláintecare. You are now less sure on that after the pandemic. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, again, just a few quick points on that. One of the reasons I took this role and wanted this role as CEO of HSE, as I was a firm believer in what Sláintecare sets out to do, and I still am. And I think it's fantastic that we have a joint party agreement on reform of the health service, so I'm still a big fan. What I'm making the point in the interview is that what we do have to do now is say, COVID has happened. How does the health system deal with a pandemic? How was it organised to deal with a national pandemic? And I think there's been a few really positive learnings for me about how the HSE has responded to the pandemic. And what I am saying in that interview is we need to consider, firstly, the priorities for the next phase that we're living with COVID, and it could be over 2 years. So what are the priorities in that phase? And for me, the priorities are certainly involvement. We see in our frontline staff, we see in our hospitals, our community services, act really quickly. So that has to work. Secondly is integration, how the acute systems and the community systems and social care systems work together. And that's key. And the only point I'm making in the interview is it's about priorities. And if we spend a lot of time on structure and not on the services while we're dealing with COVID, my point is we have to spend all of our time focusing on the services and not get too distracted on structure while we're living with COVID.
Okay, two very final, somewhat tangential, but still relating to your brief questions. Might ask you to answer them, not in a rush, but somewhat quickly as we are pushing up against time. But the first is in relation, obviously, to the opening of the schools. I know it doesn't come under the HSE, but we have seen in some other countries, Israel is being cited as the example, where there has been a spike in cases connected to the opening of the schools. Are we prepared for that eventuality if it does happen? And what are your thoughts on the reopening of schools in under a month's time now?
I think everybody in the country wants to see our schools opening. Certainly as CEO of the HSE, it's really key for our children, our young people, in terms of education, but also in terms of our physical and mental health, that we get our schools open. So we just have to do everything that's possible to have the schools open. As schools open, I think we need to do all of the right things in terms of infection prevention and control, all of the right measures if an outbreak does emerge and how we deal with it. And there are all of the scenarios that the Department of Education with National Public Health Emergency Team will be working through and have been working through. But from a HSE perspective, you know, I'm just absolutely clear. We need our children and young people in school. And we need to have a functioning society. And I know that's being difficult for everybody. And we need to have a functioning economy. So from a HSE perspective, I've always had a very rounded view. We need a functioning economy, we need a functioning society, we need a functioning education system for the future of the health service as well.
Paul, finally, we have been talking on the show about the case on the front page of the Mail on Sunday today. Carer's abuse of blind woman is the headline. Some harrowing details in it of an elderly patient who was left in the hands of an abusive home carer. I don't obviously expect you to go into the specific detail, but it is quite a shocking case in some of the details that have been outlined in the paper today. Is the HSE oversight of these kind of workers fit for purpose when you can read about these kind of events happening?
Very quick points, obviously, and some cases come across my desk which are quite harrowing, and really personally I find them, you know, tragic and awful to read, and they have to be dealt with. From a HSE's perspective, we would always welcome regulation. Regulation has improved services in the health services over many years, and we would be always open to regulation. Secondly, our own HSE and our own board have put a very strong focus on safety and quality, patient safety and quality. And we have a dedicated committee of the board who are quite diligent in reviewing how we as a HSE perform in terms of monitoring safety and quality. From my perspective, it has to be up there in our top priority. So I'd welcome regulation. From a HSE perspective, we're putting a really strong focus on this one.
Okay, Paul Reid, CEO of the HSE, thank you for talking to us this morning. A big job of work ahead of you on multiple different fronts. Thanks for speaking to On the Record on News Talk.